Hello and welcome to another edition of the Armchair Directors, where each episode we take a look at one of cinema's great directors and their essential films. This week on the show, we are going back to France and looking at Luc Besson's action classic, La Femme Nikita. Returning on the show today to talk about La Femme Nikita is Professor Marie Westhaver. Professor Westhaver, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me.
So this is definitely, I know, actually I put it as a great 80s action film, you know, it came out in 1990, but this is definitely a great action movie. It's got all the stuff you want in an action movie, the shady, mysterious organizations, the badass protagonist, lots of gunplay. It's everything's there for this
one. It does feel like an 80s movie, though. I mean, they probably made most of it in the 80s, and it came out in 1990. But yeah, the big hair, the just the clothes, everything looks very 80s.
Yeah, and I think what the real part that I really liked about this movie is the intense scenes. The scenes are really suspenseful. Like at the part when they're testing her at the beginning with the restaurant.
Yes.
And, you know, when she performs the task and she's escaping, and then you realize, oh, he lied to her. That little window there is just for bricks. There's nothing there. So she's got to find a way, and all these bad guys are shooting at her. So that's a great scene. And the other scene is when she's in the bathroom and her fiancé is knocking on the door, and you think any minute he's going to barge in and he's going to see her with a sniper rifle. So you wonder how she's going to get out of it. And those are two really great scenes where you're on your edge of your seat. Really, building of suspense is really good.
Yeah, and the first thing that you mentioned where she opens the window and she thinks she's going to escape and she realizes it's bricked up. This is when you start to think, okay, they must be trying to see how she thinks on her feet. Mm-hmm. But that's a really strange way to indoctrinate somebody, to give them instructions, and then they can't follow the instructions, so they go off on their own. I mean, how do you control somebody after that? The sniper scene, though, that I think is actually the best scene in the whole movie, because it is incredibly nerve-wracking, because she's trying to put the gun together, you know, that she has found where they have left it for her, where it's been stashed. And meanwhile, her boyfriend's in the other room trying to have this very serious conversation with her through the door. And, you know, she's sighting somebody and, you know, it's just a really thrilling scene.
When she's... You know, it's like we're just wait. We're not sure who the target is. Just wait. And you're like, oh god.
It's like, come on, I gotta shoot this person and get back out there.
And what made it a bit confusing though for me at the end, I just want your take on it, is they when she kills that woman at the bathroom scene. It's, you know, she's the woman in the brown jacket, I believe it's the brown suit. It's what they say. And then the next part is when she confronts what's his name,
the Jean Reno character.
Not the Jean Reno character. Not the fiance, the other guy. I forget his name. Michael? Like, she confronts him at the restaurant, and the camera focuses on this woman in a brown suit. And that confused me for a bit, because, like, wait, so that was that, like, all a setup? Were those, like, fake bullets? Was this staged? And that confused me for a bit. Did that confuse you? Did that throw you through a loop?
I saw it as, you know, now she's always going to see women in brown suits everywhere she goes. That is what I took it to mean.
Yeah, because that part did confuse me a little bit. But, okay, I guess... You made a good point. What's really interesting about this movie is how it sets up the protagonist at the very beginning is not a very good person. It's, you know, she kills a cop in cold blood. I mean, she puts the gun right to his head and pulls the trigger. And it's not like, you know, what some movies might make it out to be, like self-defense. Like, he was trying to beat her up or rape her or something, and she killed him. And you're like, oh, that guy deserved it. Like, no, this guy wasn't a bad guy. He was just in the wrong place, and she kills him. And it makes you like, that's your protagonist for the rest of the movie. And I thought that was really gutsy for a movie to do that.
Well, I think it means to show the protagonist as being this thrill seeker. And I saw it as kind of a Clockwork Orange sort of a thing, where you have a character who is morally irredeemable, but ruthless. And so somebody decides, hey, you know, we could use that for our benefit.
Yeah, very shocking, especially in the scene when... she's sort of being sarcastic with the police chief, and then she grabs the pencil and then just stabs him right in the middle of the hand, and she's bleeding profusely. Like, wow.
Yeah, that's a pretty interesting scene too. But they have to take her from, you know, the feral animal to, you know, the elegant, polished professional. It's a little bit of the librarian story, except with guns.
And so now that she's definitely becoming a femme fatale at this movie, when they're turning her into a femme fatale. So do you feel that this film is very noirish, because it has that kind of seedy underworld beneath the, you know, the Paris and the French cities? It focuses on like a anti-hero protagonist, and she's also a femme fatale, but like two for one with that deal. So you feel this film's a film noir?
I definitely think it's very noirish. Interestingly, we call the movie La Femme Nikita, but it's just called Nikita in France, Do you know, just the name of the character. But, you know, just calling it La Femme Nikita, you know, as if there's a man version, kind of underscores that idea of the femme fatale.
Okay. And, you know, one thing that helps with that kind of noir-ish is this, the mysteriousness of the agency. They're just called the, they're never fully identified. They're not like, we're this section of the French government or anything. You don't know who they are. They operate out of the shady, like, warehouse area. They do some, you know, something, the stuff they do may not necessarily be legal, but I, that's what I really liked about it. They're very mysterious.
Yes. You know, don't we all think that there's always some, you know, secret government group that, you know, can talk people into these kinds of things? Yeah, it really wouldn't be the same if it had a real name, because then you'd have to gauge that against what you know about that government agency. Yeah. The fact that it's maybe hidden or secret.
Yeah, it's not like it's MI6 or something.
Right.
And, you know, we talked a little bit. One of the people I like in French film is Jean-Pierre Melville. This feels like a Melville film.
Well, you know what? Luc Besson was a huge fan of Melville, and he actually wrote this in homage to Les Samouraïs.
Yeah, because it definitely feels a lot like Les Samouraïs. Because one thing that Melville always does well, which I really like, is how he keeps things quiet and just lets the visuals speak for itself. And there are scenes, especially when she's going into that embassy building, where not a lot of dialogue. Especially that, like, another great tense scene is when she's taking pictures of the document, and the security dog's coming, and there's that great scene where she's completely frozen and doesn't know what to do.
Yeah, that is a great scene. There's a lot of great scenes actually like that. It's a great action movie. It does a good job with that. Mm-hmm. And what reminds me of Les Samouraïs is the use of color. When you think of him in the car, and he's driving, and there's, you know, water on the windshield, and you know, you can see his trench coat, and just the use of color is very, when it shows up, it's very bright, and surprisingly so in a rainy scene.
Yeah, and that's perfectly brings up my next question. It was about the use of color in the movie, and the scene that really sticks out when you use the color is that opening scene when the lights aren't on, it's completely drenched in blue when that gang is breaking into the convenience store. That was a really great use of color.
Yeah, and I wonder about the use of blue. Was that meant to, you know, because the police are blue? Is it meant to be sort of an underwater thing? Is it just a neat color because blue doesn't really reflect light out? It sort of sucks it in.
Yeah, that kind of is how it is. Like, you could say it's definitely the impending, the doom. Presence of the police or doom. But, you know, sometimes, like, when they talk about the film Hero, when he said, I just wanted to use some cool colors. So, I mean, that's just it. It just looked cool.
It looked good. That's why I did it. Yes.
And one thing I really liked in the film was they actually had one of the great French actresses, Jeanne Moreau, as she's sort of the woman who it sort of implied that she was like Nikita when she was her age, I think, when she says, like, oh, so you were in this program too. I think they had something like that. She's like one of the most famous French actresses, isn't she?
Yeah, she is, especially from movies like Jules and Jim, and I mean, she's done a lot of work. Yeah, it was nice to see her in that movie because even if she wasn't Nikita when she was younger, she's, you know, sort of the old guard actress showing the younger one how to put on lipstick of all of these skills to learn. But also, you know, I've been you, maybe not literally, so let me show you the way. And having it be Jeanne Moreau was just a nice touch.
Yeah, and she's been in films like The Bride Wore Black and Elevator to the Gallows. She has been playing that femme fatale, so you can definitely see it in her character.
Yeah, and her characters always are a little bit more tough.
And she's pretty crazy in Jules and Jim. She kills him at the end.
Yeah, she's very crazy in that one. She's like the bad cousin of Catherine Deneuve or something, you know. Cool ice blonde, but there's something sinister going on with her at all times. It feels that way to me.
And then, of course, we talk about the main character in the film, Nikita, which was played by, I'll probably mispronounce her name,
Anne Perriod.
And I was reading, she went under a lot. She did a lot of intense training. She went through, like, boot camp, and she was, like, learning how to fire weapons. So she went through a lot to perform for this role.
Yeah, they said that, you know, she had to convincingly put those guns together really fast. Mm-hmm. So she would practice in the car.
Wow.
Until the day she got pulled over. And the police wanted to know what she was doing in there with that gun.
Just don't blind the guns, officer. You know, and I guess reading, she actually got, like, she really got into that role where sometimes she said even like she would even after the film was over, she would be acting like that character sometimes, I think what she said.
Yeah, and I think that character pretty much defined her entire career. I don't think anything she did after that ever gave her any sort of recognition. She was always Nikita. But she made a lot of money and got a lot of fame from it. So, I mean, if you're going to have one movie, might as well be a successful one.
So I was curious. So what other films has she, like, what other notable films has she done in France?
I don't think she's done any more notable films in France. I know she's done other projects, but nothing has been.
You haven't seen anything else?
I haven't seen anything else.
Oh, okay. And then, of course, watching one of the characters, even though he's only in the film very briefly, shows up, and you can't help but thinking of another character from a Luc Besson film is Jean Reno's character as the cleaner. And when you watch this film, you can't help but think of The Professional, which would come out just 4 years later.
Yeah, he likes using Jean Reno, and he's a terrific actor, mm-hmm. and he's terrific in this. Yeah, that's one of his, hallmarks of his films. He likes using him. He likes using Eric Serra for the music. He likes having a scene where somebody gets slapped, and before they're slapped, you know, there's a big close-up of the hand. Mm-hmm. He does chase scenes pretty well. I mean, I don't know if you've seen the Taxi series. They're terrific. He wrote them. He didn't direct them, but they're all about a guy who was a pizza delivery guy who decides to start a taxi service. His girlfriend is Marion Cotillard before she was a big deal.
Oh, this isn't like that 70s sitcom?
No, sitcom. No, this is a French, it's kind of like The Fast and the Furious.
Oh, okay.
You know, it's like an excuse to show really cool scenes with people driving cars too fast. And it has that Luc Besson thing where you get that really low angle, like low on the bumper, like you're the tire and you're flying through the streets or wherever. Mm-hmm. These are set in, the Taxi series is set in Marseille.
Yeah, another thing that I always notice about Besson is he likes a lot of scenes in apartments.
He does like scenes in apartments.
This film and The Professional, which takes almost entirely in apartments or hotels, and then even a bit in The Fifth Element.
Except not with The Big Blue.
Okay.
Obviously, because that's about marine biology. But, you know, what's interesting about that is his parents were scuba diving instructors.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and he traveled around the world with them with his early life. He didn't even have a TV until he was 16.
Wow.
And then he wanted to be a marine biologist. He was, you know, very interested in water and sports. And then he had an accident, a diving accident at 17, which meant he couldn't dive anymore. Hmm. So he, even as a teenager, had been writing things like the script that would end up being The Big Blue and The Fifth Element.
Hmm. That's interesting. You know, so of other any other performances that would stick out for you in the movie besides Reno, Pelliard, or Moreau?
Well, those are the big ones, aren't they? Mm-hmm. The other ones, there's some good supporting characters. The boyfriend's very sweet. You wonder if he knows more than he does, but in the end, you don't really feel like he. You feel like he knows what she does, but he doesn't understand what it took for her to get there.
When he tells him, like, oh, she killed a cop, and he doesn't really bat an eye.
Yeah.
It's sort of kind of like he knew she did something really bad, but, you know, he still loved her anyway.
Yeah, it's a nice character because it gives her a choice to make. You know, it gives her an option. Mm-hmm. Is she going to be the government assassin forever, or is she going to go off with the nice boyfriend? So what do you think happens in the end?
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe she comes back to him. I don't think she's going to go back to the agency, but you know, you don't know how extensive that agency is. Maybe they find her, and if she refuses and she's completely done, they're just going to put her away in, you know, in row 8, plot 30.
You know, I showed this in my class, in my French film class, and we talked about the ending, and most of the students thought that she died, that she went off on some final mission and would not return. Hmm. Which would explain why there was no Nikita 2. But that seems like a very cynical and, I don't know, kind of a cop-out in a way. And the boyfriend doesn't seem like he's that broken up about it, like I'm never going to see her again. So I'm not sure I think that she dies after the movie.
I think he just realized that she has to get away and he couldn't be with her. And so I think he just said, okay, you got to do what you got to do. And then she leaves. And that's my thought.
That's a sad ending. They seemed like a nice couple.
Yeah. And so you talked a bit about Eric Serra, and his score for this film, you know, it also feels a lot like the work he did with Besson on The Professional. It has that industrial-like sound, very urban and city-like. It feels very city-like. You're in that very fitting for the city environment.
Yeah, which is sort of noir, but like modern noir, because that's sort of the sound of the disaffected people who have to live with that industrial loud noises, too many people, construction,
traffic, everything, And one other complaint I felt with the film, I wanted to get your take on this, is I felt it jumped around a bit with time a bit too much. Like, okay, when she's going through the training, and then it says, like, oh, I'm about to turn 20. She brings that up. And then the head guy says, she's not doing very well. I'm going to give you 2 weeks or she's got to go. And then cut, like, a couple scenes later, she's now saying that she's 23. What happened to those 2 weeks? And she's still training she's been training all this time. She hasn't gotten a job yet. I mean, that part confused me. And there's another scene when, you know, it seems like her and a boyfriend just met. And then it's in like cut next and they're talking about their friends and they've been together 6 months now. And I felt, did that jump around too much for you as well? Or is that just me?
I did notice it. I just sort of went with it. But I do agree that it did jump around a lot, and also that I thought they spent a lot of time on bringing her up to speed, and that could have been tightened up a little bit. I was more interested in what happened to her after she was trained than all the different ways that her handler was, you know, playing these mind games.
Yeah, it did get a little, they could have cut a little bit from that training scene. It did drag a bit too much, especially if she's been there for 3 years. Like, you'd think they'd give her at least one shot to prove her training worked out.
But. And even in the scene where Jean Moreau's trying to teach her how to smile, she doesn't really pull it off. But then later she's smiling. So, you know, when did she pick it up? They cut out, I guess, all the scenes of her practicing in front of the mirror or whatever. And by the way, I read recently that Luc Besson does not like to do interviews or provide commentary for DVDs because he thinks it ruins the film. But see, these would be really interesting things in the director's commentary. You know, like, why jump there?
Yeah.
And what about that smiling scene? And was that how you wanted it to go? Or was there something else that didn't make it in because you had to edit it down? I mean, these would be great things for a commentary.
Or even like what I talked about earlier with so when she comes back and she sees the woman in the brown, is that sort of saying that she's always going to see that? Or was that not the case or whatever?
But, right. And was the blue a choice, a deliberate choice? Or was that just because it looked cool?
Yeah, we have a lot of things to ask him.
Let's get him on the horn.
Yes, we can get him. And so this film, actually, I looked it up. It made quite a deal. It was a big hit at the box office in France. It was one of the highest grossing films in 1990 there.
Yeah, this was a huge film. And Luc Besson, I think this probably was what made him more of an international presence. They call him the most Hollywood of French filmmakers.
Oh, yes.
Because he does these, you know, action kind of movies with drugs and sleaze and supervillains and Hong Kong style effects. In fact, one reviewer said that each of Luc Besson's new projects probably starts with Whiteout on the title page.
And you actually just made up a good point. It feels very Hong Kong-ish, like especially like the shootouts, like at the beginning, and then when she's at the restaurant, it feels almost like a John Woo movie.
Or like Infernal Affairs, which came out around then, now that I think about it.
The 2002 film?
Yeah. Well, I mean, close to.
Yeah. I've seen that. I don't remember a lot of shootouts in that movie. It was just more like chasing.
Oh, well, there's the scene in what was The Departed where Martin Sheen goes off the roof.
Yeah,
the
I remember that scene.
That scene that they did in Infernal Affairs, there's a shootout on the street once they've found Superintendent Wong.
Never mind. You're right. Never mind.
And it's very much in that style. You know, the car screeches up.
People, slow motion.
Yeah, someone diving behind. Yeah.
Yeah. So this film has quite a legacy because I wonder if you've seen, this was remade a few years later into an American film, was Point of No Return, and Bridget Fonda was the main star. Have you seen that film?
I did back in the day. And you know, Bridget Fonda does a good job with it, but it's really hard to remake something that the reason you like it is because it's quirky, different, you haven't seen it before. You know, as soon as you try to remake that, you lose all the spontaneity and the surprise.
And then another thing, my parents are listening, and they would never forgive me if I didn't bring this up. There was a TV show called La Femme Nikita in the 90s. It was in Canada, but I remember as a kid, It was on a lot of U.S. TV networks. I think it was on like USA or Fox or one of those. And actually, to prepare for the show, I did watch the first episode of that TV show, and it's very much similar to this one. Like, there's that scene in the restaurant, and even the with the brick window, and it's like even the beginning when, you know, they wipe her memories. Like, you know, they even have the same thing. Row 8, plot 30. You're with us, or we'll just make sure you're in that grave. It's a pretty good show. Now, because it's the TV, they don't go as far with that character. Because in that show, she's not a drug addict. There's none of that shootout or anything. She's just a homeless person, and she just happens to stumble upon somebody killing a police officer, and she's sort of framed for it. And even in the show, in that first episode, I don't know, she may have done more, but she doesn't kill anybody. She tries not to kill anybody because she doesn't want to be a killer. So it seems like the TV show is pretty good, but I think that the film was able to go, like, they wanted to go in a more darker direction.
Well, you know, sanitizing it for TV makes sense because you have a lot more restrictions on what you can show. But, you know, you pretty much, I would think you would drain the lifeblood out of it. I mean, one of the reasons it works is because it's shocking, because the character is unlikable, and because she starts off from, you know, you're not even sure she even knows what she's doing. She's just a lost soul. And it is an interesting psychological study. And that whole darkness to it is part of what makes the movie good.
Yeah, that's why I liked it a bit more than that TV version, just because I like how they went there with that movie. They didn't, like, well, she, you know, they didn't try to make it easy to sympathize with her. Like, oh, she's just, you know, she got framed. Like, nope, she did it, and she just felt no remorse for it.
None. Yeah, that's why I felt very Clockwork Orange to me, and daring to use a female protagonist. But I can see that, you know, it might be an interesting, different kind of story to have an ongoing plot where you're the secret assassin for the government, as yet unnamed, and you have to skulk around and, you know, always be getting these phone calls where you're trying to put together a weapon while someone is sleeping in the other room, you know.
Yeah, and I do remember in that time of the TV show, it's like they're a counterterrorism unit. They stop a lot of terrorists and stuff. So every week on the show, they have to stop another terrorist attack or something. And actually, she's actually set up in like a hotel area. I don't think there was a fiance character in that TV show, but I think she was more in love with that Michael character.
Right.
And anyway, but she's there she's the Josephine. So she gets the phone call. Hello, Josephine. That's the new job. But yeah.
Yeah. I can see how you could maintain a series that was all about every week was a different, you know, job, and always led to the shootout and the chase scene and everything. Because that's one of the things people like about the movie are those scenes. So, you know, you take that out and make it a serial. I could see why that would work, but I've never seen the TV show.
Yeah, I watched a few episodes as a kid. I'd only watched the pilot episode, a bit of the pilot episode a couple days ago. So far from an expert, but I think it's an interesting watch. If you like the movie, I'm pretty sure you'll like the TV show. And if you like the TV show, you'll probably like the movie. So,
how do they do with their Nikita for TV? Is she a compelling character?
Yeah, I think they want to focus her, like, you know, her conscience, and like she doesn't want to be a killer because she didn't kill that cop. Everybody thinks she killed the cop. They don't believe her. She kind of wants to prove everybody, no, I'm not this person. So it's pretty good. I give it a recommend.
Okay. Maybe I'll give it a shot.
And actually, speaking of Nikita, there was actually a U.S. version. I think it was on like the CW in 2010. I wonder if you've seen that or have you heard of it.
Was it called Nikita?
Yeah, it's just called Nikita.
I heard of it. I didn't watch it.
Okay, so me neither. And so I guess we could talk a bit about the career of Luc Besson. Now, he's still making movies. I know the recent one he did was Lucy, that film with Scarlett Johansson.
Yes. Yes, which is actually directed by his current wife number 4.
Oh, she directed it?
Uh-huh.
Oh, I thought he directed it.
I think he wrote it. He's involved in the production, but the real person behind the throne there is actually his wife. He said after he did 10 movies that he was going to stop, but since then he said, well, you know, I never thought you were going to let me make 10 movies, so I think he's going to keep making movies. He's, you know, they call his look or his movies, they say that it's part of the cinema du look, meaning that it's all style over substance, which kind of goes into the idea that he's this very Hollywood style director. When you think about, you know, following the new wave where everybody was trying to do all these nifty techniques and make it obvious that you're watching a movie and, you know, play with the rules. He's very much the rules. You know, it's kind of a stock sort of setup, you know.
He's very, I would say he's, of all the things, he's not a very subtle director. Everything's big, everything's over the top and crazy, like kind of like a John Woo where it's just action, 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 like this movie, shootout, 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 killing, killing, killing. Same thing with The Professional at the end of that shootout, and The Fifth Element is just nuts to me, especially with that Chris Tucker character. He's just crazy. So he, I would say he likes to just have everything crazy. It is off-the-wall action and insanity in his movies.
He does. I think that's a great way to describe him.
So I would say if other films of his I recommend, I really like The Professional. And I think the Fifth Element is fun if you like kind of crazy over-the-top sci-fi. So any other films of his you would recommend in his French career?
The Taxi series, for sure, because they are really fun to watch. And, you know, when you look up Taxi, you're going to end up finding the TV series. You have to look up Luc Besson's Taxi.
Okay.
Although, again, he wrote them. He didn't direct them. But they are really entertaining. And you'll see a young Marion Cotillard. The Big Blue, which is probably what he's most known for, it's got a really sappy storyline, but the cinematography is amazing because it's about diving.
Okay. All right. So getting close to my questions here, is there anything I haven't covered that you want to bring up now?
Well, I do have a quote from him that I think is interesting. Luc Besson said, "Cinema never saved anyone's life. It is not a medicine that will save anyone's life. It is only an aspirin." I don't know, I think that's an interesting quote.
Yeah. So is he saying, like, it won't change your life, but it'll help make you feel better?
Right. For these 2 hours that you're sitting there in the theater, you may still have your high blood pressure, your diabetes or whatever, but
you'll feel better
about it.
Yeah.
For 2 hours, yeah. And I think that's why he makes his movies the way he does. He wants to entertain people.
Okay. And then, so last question I'll have is, just if you brought, we're probably, by the time this comes out, your French film course will be over, but how did you bring this into your French film course this semester?
This semester, during International Week, we were showing several movies about photography. And the one of them was Henri Cartier-Bresson. And I was also talking about Robert Bresson in class. So I thought, you know, I can bring in Luc Besson. So it was all about these Essons. I showed a little bit about Henri Cartier-Bresson, showed some scenes from Pickpocket from Robert Bresson, and then showed La Femme Nikita.
Okay. Well, that wraps up this episode of The Armchair Directors. We have been talking about French director Luc Besson and his 1990 action classic La Femme Nikita. Don't forget, you can listen to The Armchair Directors every Thursday at 9:30 a.m., Sunday at 2:30 p.m., or anytime at our new podcast page, dragondigitalradio.podbean.com, under the category Armchair Directors. Professor Westhaver, I want to thank you again for coming on the show today.
Thanks for having me.
For The Armchair Directors, I'm your host, Alex Baker, saying Row 8, Plot 30.